welcome to Try Not to Blink. Today's show is going to give an eyewear update covering new technology, including a Frame Plus hearing aid coming to market, and then inspire everyone to stop gatekeeping the secret of the workspace lens. Then we'll introduce our guest, Dr. Vakashan Nataraja, where we will talk about life in academia. We'll debate the need for a corneal scleral profiler in fitting scleral lenses and if robots are about to replace us. We'll discuss pearls for academia and then the differences in communication strategies when communicating to millennials versus Gen Z docs.
What the Gen Z generation is, they do a lot of things on... We all know that Gen Z has, like, they're very socially aware, right? They like to collaborate. They're very tech savvy too. And I think there's research out there that says, like, they literally reach for a device like every 7 minutes.
We'd like to thank the amazing people at Valley Contacts who have made this podcast possible. Makers of stellar gas permeable lenses and the incredible custom stable scleral lens. I'm your host, Dr. Roya Habibi, and joining me is Dr. Sheila Morrison. Sheila, let's do this. First things first, I want a CellPod. It's been a minute. I'm putting you on the spot.
CellPod? Oh, yeah. We could do that. Okay, so let's see. CellPod, I would say something that's been coming up a lot in the clinic lately is mind your, like, suction behind the lens.
Okay.
So there's absolutely nothing good about any form of a lens that pulls when a patient takes it off or if your edges are too tight. There's so many problems that happen from fitting almost too aligned and also neglecting to teach people how to properly take a lens off that doesn't cause a whole bunch of suction when they pull the device off.
Okay, let's do
that. So my CellPod is mind your suction.
Mind your suction. I like it.
Don't suck. Mind your suction.
Don't suck too much. Don't let your lens suck. What is your, like, how do you instruct a patient to not cause too much suction when removing? Like, what do you say?
Number one is do not put the removal device in the center of the lens and pull.
Okay.
We always want to take a lens off from a peripheral location. And usually what we instruct patients to do is try to put an air bubble under the lens before they remove it. So that can be done just by pressing on the sclera just at the edge of the lens, just by giving a little tiny bit of an indent. Not hard, no pain, nothing really aggressive, but just enough to inch a little bit of air underneath.
I like that idea.
And then the removal becomes very easy. The other way that we kind of break the suction before pulling the lens off would be to move the eye into any gaze position outside of primary. You can kind of look up or tilt the chin down, look straight ahead. That means the eye will be kind of anatomically and at about 45 degrees.
Okay, up, yeah.
And just that... Yeah, exactly. Just a little movement up or down is enough sometimes to move the aligned edge onto a flatter or just a different shape, and that will break the suction too. And then you can put the plunger at a peripheral location and then, you know, remove the lens.
I like that tip. Wasn't you and I talking about this, that someone was asking, do you teach your patient? No, someone else. Do you teach your patients to remove their lenses without the plunger?
We don't.
Yeah.
Do you?
I started to teach some patients, especially like GP wearers, because they hate, I don't know about you, if you agree with this, but they hate a plunger. Most of my patients that switch from a GP to a scleral, usually begrudgingly at first, and then they love you, but they hate having to use devices. And so usually I would still teach with a plunger first, but then I would start to teach without it. And then usually they were super happy, because that's usually what they were complaining about the most. Is not being able
the
to
handling.
Use
you're so right about that. The handling thing from a corneal GP wearer is like literally the worst.
They hate it.
You can give somebody the best scleral lens in the world. Their vision is way better. Comfort's way better.
Oh, but yeah. They're like, choose but my not other to wear ones were fine. Because,
yeah.
And you're like, you were like, literally really, complaining about everything.
Are they really fine?
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
I know.
I had a couple of headaches.
So what do you do to teach people how to remove without, just for like, kind of like, I've got a few ideas. Actually, I had a guy, unfortunately, that I think was really kind of breaking the seal by in the horizontal meridian, kind of pinching on the sclera to break the seal. And he actually injured himself.
Yep.
Doing it. It's just too much pressure, especially on like a post-surgical eye, like a graft.
Of course.
That's like an area you don't really want to be pushing on every single day.
Totally. I'm sorry.
Certain eyes. I think we're talking about the same thing.
There is some eyes that you just like, it's just not a good idea. But honestly, it's a little bit like removing a gas perm.
same general concept. If you get
lid
that,
technique.
Yeah, you, if you can get your lids wide enough and you kind of push on that lower lid, it will kind of pop that suction out. There's some amazing, I'm going to see if I can find them and I'll link them to the show notes, where there's some amazing videos online that show people how to do it, but it's really actually not that hard. So, but it's a nice option. Again, usually it's, I don't bring it up for normal patients, but for GP wearers, they usually like the option. So anyways,
it makes sense why you could do it that way, because it, all you're doing by getting your lids outside of the scleral and kind of pressing is putting an air bubble under it, and then it just falls off.
Exactly.
So, I mean, if you can do that safely, then, I mean, why not?
It's,
I guess,
like
the one thing I would say,
oh, go ahead.
One thing with that is another way that I'll kind of increase the likelihood of getting it off quickly would be lean forward slightly. So gravity, then once that air bubble is underneath, you're kind of, the lens kind of falls forward and down.
Yeah, that's a great call. Yeah, the, I lost my train of thought, but I think it's just nice to have, for people to have options, because you and I both know we've had patients that call like over the weekend, or they end up in the ER because they lose their plunger or they can't get their lens out, and that's not helpful. So having that as a backup, or even putting it in a scleral lens guide that you maybe give to a patient to use as a resource, is a good idea. Or maybe even link it to a blog post on your website. So if someone's freaking out, trying to get in contact with you guys on off hours, they could hopefully stumble upon that and find it. That's just an idea I just came up with. So we should all do that, because...
Did you implement it yet?
No, I literally said it out loud and was like,
yeah, okay, good. Because I was just thinking that I'll probably implement that idea or bring it to our doctor team tomorrow.
Yeah, why not? Like, that's such a frantic call, and you could just have an easy resource online.
Anything we can do to prevent our patients from going off the deep end with any, like, specialty lenses when you go to the ER, other doctors don't know how to deal with it.
No, they don't know. Poor things. Anyways, okay. Cell pod check. Next thing I want to do is go over an eyewear update. It's been a minute since we've done anything like this, and I thought it might be fun. There's some new things in eyewear coming out, some tech things, we'll say. So I want to talk about first something that was at, it was an, I think it was kind of announced at Vision Expo, but it is a eyewear technology that includes hearing. So it's a pair of glasses that has a hearing aid, essentially, around the temples. And so Essilor is partnering with another company, essentially trying to broaden their horizon, you know, broaden their you know, patient field, demographic, I guess you could say. And they are embedding this high quality hearing technology into fashion eyewear. And I think it's a brilliant idea. So it's supposedly going to be launched to commercial market in Q2 of 2024, so soon-ish. And it's pretty cool. No cost has been announced yet. I actually read this on Glance, the Eyes on Eye Care, my favorite weekly digest. But I'll link the article in the show notes. But it's pretty awesome, because, I mean, I think it kind of goes both ways, both eyes seeing and hearing. When you can't see or hear well, it's affects you, right? Like, it's a big deal.
Discombobulating.
Yeah, and it's kind of like a sad thing, especially if it's related, and which usually is, to aging. Some people don't want to admit or don't want to wear hearing aids, and if there is a way to put it all together and be a little less clunky, that would be great. I have a little video.
I have questions about this.
Right.
Do you have the video? If you could put it up, like, I have questions about how it works, then is it actually a device that comes off of the temple and goes into the ear the same as a regular hearing aid, or is there a little speaker in the temple?
It's in, kind of thing. It's embedded within the temple.
Is it obvious that it is a hearing device?
No, it looks like just literally a pair of black frame, at least the demo one that they show in the video. And the video, they have like a 1 minute video clip, so you have to go and watch it. But basically they have something going on the screen and it's super muted, and then the person puts the glasses on and everything just kind of clears up. So it's kind of cool. Very interesting option for us to be able to talk to our patients about in the future. Plus, it's kind of like a nice thing you could kind of work into your normal conversation, and then maybe even like work with a community audiologist or ENT to kind of, you know, have a little more synchronicity in your field.
I love that.
Right.
You're so right about it being just an exceptional tool to kind of add to the toolbox.
Exactly. I mean, that's all we can ask for, right? One more thing to maybe like bring in patients and help them out. Speaking of which, I have another favorite optical toolbox item.
toolbox
the workspace
item.
Lens. What do you prescribe the workspace lens? This is the near variable focus or computer lens, the progressive design based on your workspace. What do you think about it?
We love that lens at our office. It's such like a huge practice builder because it's essentially a bonus pair of glasses. Everybody needs a good full scope progressive that they can do their daily activities, but it's just such like a nice, we even say, but it's not, I mean, bonus might even be making it seem like it's less essential than it is. Did you know that most Americans spend like between 8 to 10 hours a day staring at screens?
Absolutely. Let's just say North
America. Those stats are crazy.
Like, oh, totally. I actually, not to toot my own horn, but I just published a article in Presbyopia Physician. I'll link it in the show notes for anyone to read it, but it was called The Untapped Potential of Occupational Lenses. And I talked about just that.
Gosh.
So talk about how much time people spend on the computer, showing that 65% of people report some sort of dry eye symptoms, 40% feel tired half the time at work. And this is obviously going to affect task-related errors, decreased productivity, et cetera. I talk about some like pearls and tips for recommending the lenses, which I'll go into, but I'm kind of sad that I didn't like drag my feet on writing this article because a study was just published that's super cool. So basically it was on the effects of income when providing near vision correction. I say this to patients all the time that these literally are better for your life. It's a life upgrade. But then this study kind of helped, kind of as an old data, but 10,000 participants were in this study. They basically took people from 35 to 65 with some amount of presbyopia that they defined. And what they did is they randomized people to either have glasses with immediate reading. They gave everyone free reading glasses, or their glasses were delivered 8 months later. So they either got it right away or they didn't. And they stratified people into how much their near demand was. And then they had outcomes of like how you're feeling, monthly income, near vision related quality of life, etc. And essentially the bottom line is that medium income increased by 33% in the people who had some sort of near vision correction. And that the quality of life improved. Many people returned to work who currently were unemployed, etc. This was actually done in India, so obviously a little different than North American population.
Money talks. That's like the bottom line, right? That's what everybody wants. It's more productivity, more money in the bank, more money for less work.
Well, and honestly,
it makes sense.
Totally. And I think from our perspective, like if we just need to start even within our own companies, like think of this as a bonus for some of your employees. Even if you have an employee older than like 40, 45, it's such an amazing tool to recommend even for your employees that are maybe your receptionist or your, you know, person calling insurance all day long, especially if they're having to, you know, look at different distances as well. So I love this lens. I can't stop talking about it. I talk about it every day. It's such an easy second pair sell because it truly is. I tell patients if you spend more than an hour to a day on the computer, which we already know basically everyone does, then you really should have a larger amount of real estate for the screen. Bottom line.
Mic drop. I love that.
Mic drop.
These are good. These updates today are really practical, to be honest. I mean, the occupational lens and the possibility of combining technology to provide things to other sensory parts of our body that are right beside the eyes. I mean, these are cool. Good digs today, Rhea.
Just better tools for the tool chest.
Better tools for the toolbox.
Yeah. Toolbox. I like that. Okay. So now to the fun part of our episode. We have an extra special guest. This guest came based off of a post that we did. We called it maybe like a casting call, would you say, to our Instagram account asking for recommendations for guests to the show. And today's guest was nominated by one of our recent honored guests, one that we deemed or we self-proclaimed the myopia master, the Dr. Justin Kwan.
The heavy on the B.
Exactly.
Justin Kwan. So awesome.
I know.
Yeah. Anybody that Justin sends over, we know is going to be wonderful to speak with.
Cancel all future arrangements. We're getting this guy on. We need to know why and like everything about this guy if Dr. Kwan likes him. So.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. So anyway, we were really quick to schedule. Actually, it's the first of our casting call to schedule. So let me first introduce. So we have Dr. Vakashan Nataraja. practice that a few
times. Yeah, you got it right.
Dr. Vaki, he also goes by. So anyways, he little background. He hails from Ontario. He made his way to the U.S. with his family. Kind of cool family history. His parents are actually from Sri Lanka, and they found refuge in Canada during the Civil War in Sri Lanka. Afterwards, their family moved, like I said, to the U.S. He earned his bachelor's degree in biology at Lewis University, then did his optometry degree at Illinois College of Optometry, went to do his residency training in cornea and contact lens at a small school called UC Berkeley. and then after Berkeley, he joined Midwestern University faculty. And that's kind of where you've been since then, correct?
Yep. Currently right here, right now.
Right here, staying late, working with us. We really appreciate it.
Teacher life. Love it.
I'm honestly so jealous. I love my private practice. Like, I'm so blessed and so honored to be where I'm at. Really love the journey, but I loved when I was teaching, and that's such a special thing. You know, I'm just looking at the whole shebang of all the credentials Roy just went over. What an impressive, like, long but quick journey to get to where you are. You've really, like, taken academia by storm.
Yeah, which it's really funny because, like, I hadn't imagined this would be, like, my path to. So it's just nice to, like, do all of that things within like a decade, which is like crazy.
Oh, it's so impressive. You're like, and so did you not know that you wanted to be a teacher?
No. Yeah. This is my fifth year. And in our institution, we can actually go up for promotion as associate professor after 5 years.
Snaps.
So it's just, it's crazy. Time flies. Yeah.
Congratulations.
It is weird. There is like, okay, I'm pretty sure this is still a thing, but there's like the young optometry like group. And I remember thinking like, God, those guys are like barely in, like, what is young anymore? But I'm kind of like at the cusp. Like, I don't think I qualify for young optometrist anymore. Like, we've been out for almost like 9 years, Sheila. Ten years since I graduated for me. 9 for you, yeah?
It's 10 years. Like, yeah.
Ouch. Time really does fly.
That's crazy. You guys are still young.
Obviously. Still young. Just kidding. But time does fly. Okay, so you're the clinical care coordinator, the chief of the cornea and contact lens services at the Chicago College of Optometry. And obviously an assistant professor, soon to be an associate professor, it sounds like.
So congratulations again. Mm-hmm. Amazing. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, so you didn't imagine yourself being in academia, you said. Like, what did you, like, 6-7 years ago, you know, third, fourth year, what were you thinking? Like, what did you want?
So, like, when I was a third year and such, like, I kind of wanted to do residency and then, like, didn't know if I wanted to. And then, like, going through, like, the different rotations, my fall rotation was in contact lens. And I, like, instantly fell in love with it just because the patients that we saw back essentially, like, were giving them sight. And they were so grateful. So I think that, like, instant gratification definitely, like, hit really close to me. And I felt like, oh, like, this is something I want to specialize in and something I want to do forever, right?
Absolutely. It is fun, right? People, like, go through all this hard work and, like, surgery. Yeah. And then we get to just, like, you know, basically, like, wrap the box. Like, it's the last step of the present. And we get a lot of the accolades for it. And it's kind of cool, right? I'm not trying to underappreciate what, you know, scleral lenses
glaucoma
can do.
Doctors do, or for example.
I know. Right. Like, someone gets a corneal transplant and they don't get the, like, I know that people love their cornea surgeons usually, but we just get all that shine and it's so fun, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So fun.
It's awesome. Okay. So you didn't think you wanted to, like, be in, you, okay. So you go into cornea and contact lens, but why did you decide academia?
So, like, during my residency, I got exposed to precepting and then going in contact lens lab, essentially, and interacting with students. So, like, out of residency, I did want to do, like, private practice, work at, like, an OMD-OD practice, possibly. But then just being exposed to teaching students, that was like, oh, like, this is a route that I could possibly do. And then from California, I wanted to come back to the Chicagoland area just because also my like extended family's in Toronto still. So this is kind of like home base.
Geologically, absolutely.
And so then I applied to some practices and then also like the schools here too. And then just like vibe wise, I'm a very like vibe person. So like during residency interviews, I was like, oh, Berkeley, like match me. Like everyone there loved them. And so same here, like interviewed and like Midwestern was very like welcoming. And then just thinking about like the different things I can do in academia. So like research and then like teach clinically, like see patients still, but then be in a lab or like lecture. So I like to do different things and I think of myself as innovative. So doing those like newer things or being exposed to newer things, I think like academia has so much to offer for that.
I mean, honestly, innovation and like being in academia, Sheila, I know you can say this, granted you have like every bell and whistle now in the book, but nothing is more startling than leaving, whether it be school or residency, and then going into the real world and knowing that like none of those tools are actually real. Or I don't mean real per se, but like normal practices don't have any of those things and they are expensive, right? So it's jarring to lose access to so many fun tools that you do have in academia. So that's something to think about when you leave,
right?
What is important to you to practice the way you want and finding practices that have that or going back into academia or whatever it might be.
True or false? I couldn't agree more with that. I remember I used to stand up and it, like with talking about to whoever was asking about the journey from academia to private practice. And I remember many, many times saying, man, I came from all the bells and whistles to having it kind of feel like I'm like relearning things or get adjusting to new minimal equipment. I know I'm just preaching in the choir with you, especially you're all the way cold start, Costa Rica, starting with basically, I came into a practice that had a lot of equipment, but there was a lot of things we were missing. Some of that high tech stuff is really only reserved for the schools in the beginning, you know? That's like a huge, what would you say, Vaki is Dr. Vaki? Is the we're on a nickname basis now, right? We're getting closer already. What are your favorite pieces of equipment at the school that you guys have over at in the contact lens clinic these days?
Yeah, so it's really awesome that actually every year, like my clinical dean was like, you know, your department, we gotta like account for everything you're gonna ask for every year, pretty much. So I'm like, sure, why not? That's my reputation. But essentially, like in our, because I'm part of like the dry clinic as well. Mm-hmm. So we got the IPL machine, like the Optilite.
Nice.
So that's really great to use and expose for students because I don't know if they'll get that opportunity during their rotations or even like after they practice too.
Is that a little rare so it's nice. At the schools to have an IPL? Is that uncommon? Because I haven't heard of many schools having that. That's sweet.
Yeah. I think Berkeley just got it like this year too. But there's other devices. I think it also depends on like the state privileges as well. But yeah, I don't think a lot of schools may have it. But then you guys know in the contact lens world, we also got the Eaglet and like the SMAP too. So like both of them available.
Nice.
So having that for our students too, just to see like, oh, like what is this shiny new equipment that looks like an alien, you know?
Just for our listeners that might not know the names, the Eaglet or the SMAP, what are those things?
So basically it's a scleral corneal profiler. So it maps out the cornea and the sclera and actually links with certain lab manufacturers in the contact lens world. So they can produce custom lenses a little bit better for our patients and essentially like save chair time, right?
Do you feel like especially in the schools, do you feel like students learning on that is almost like using a calculator for math? Like, is it helping them learn the technique more or is it almost like too easy? You know, how does that play into even like how you learned? Like, did you learn with the SMAP and Eaglet both? Did you have both those options or were you kind of forced to do a little?
100% no, like we did not. It was like by Berkeley, especially too, like we learned on the Jupiter and like the Essilor lens. So a lot of like math and like these curves do the like these things, right?
Absolutely.
So very like foundational things. But then with all these machines, like I totally agree. Like it sometimes is kind of like a cheat, right? In some aspect, but they need to know what's out there.
Absolutely.
But then that's what's great about being in a school. We have like four or three other different contact lens providers too. So some patients I may like use the eaglet. Some patients I'm going to do it like diagnostic fit. So it's nice to have those like options. And we all know that school time-wise per patient is very different from the outside world. So it's nice to have that flexibility so we can utilize one method or the other.
Very cool.
Now I have one last question, because you know I have a special interest, Roy, in ocular shape and all of the tools to measure it in the school. So we have the two, so diagnostic fitting, we can also essentially take data from these devices and kind of click and send to the manufacturer to, or use the algorithms to design a starting lens. Are the schools teaching students to look at, like, same as we would look at a corneal topographer and understand that shape and then choose, say, what we want for a corneal lens? Is it the same approach with scleral lenses, or is it more, if you're going to use a lens that has an algorithm, you use it? If you're going to do a diagnostic fit, you use it. Is there any in between with the way that you guys teach?
I think so. Through like the didactic portion, we try to teach of like how to reach each of these topographies essentially to the students. But yeah, there might be like a blend of like for ortho K's, like we have a fitting set for one company. But I may order using a different company that's empirical just because of like parameters mm-hmm. or warranty or something like that. So if I plan to order empirically, I still have them put the lens on just so they can evaluate it, because sometimes they might not see the follow-up for these patients. So I want to expose them to like something, right? And then we talk about, oh, like this is what the empirical side would look like too.
I love that. Very cool. It's so cool because Sheila had the opposite, not the opposite, but she did have so much technology. And when I was trained in my residency or fellowship, I didn't have that. It's not that I didn't have it. I just didn't use it. Because we at our mm-hmm. clinic were a higher volume center. So I ended up doing most of mine diagnostically. And so just seeing the difference and actually teaching that in the schools, I think is so amazing. Because I do hear, actually, we had a question a while back from a listener. I think we might have talked about this just between Sheila and I, but I'd like to hear your input on, oh, with the new scleral topographers, there isn't going to be a need for fitting scleral lenses anymore. Is that true? And I don't know, what is your response to that?
Yeah, I feel like, I don't know, I feel like since all of us kind of, we like doing that stuff, right? Like having the lens on, like tinkering with it, seeing what's going on. I feel like, I don't know if they have programs where they can like figure out the base curve and power, but like, you know, always putting on a lens for the over refraction essentially still. But I mean, you know, technology is always changing, especially with AI and everything like that. So that might be a thing, but there's definitely still cons to those approaches as much as there are pros, right?
Absolutely.
So I don't think it's going to disappear completely, but it's up to the person, right? Mm-hmm. And how we teach.
Totally. Roy, I probably should clear like a little misconception too, in that, like, say, for example, a background where, like, you know that my residency at the time, we were beta testing a lot of the ocular surface topographers before they were on the market. So that's where some of the kind of that tech design, but there's also part of residency that was fitting hundreds of, you know, free just lenses on patients at the VA with zero equipment. So
totally.
Through doing it both ways.
Not saying that you weren't doing it both ways. I totally mean just like, I didn't even really, we didn't have a scleral topographer during mine.
Yeah.
Like I didn't have access at all. So that learning technique is just so, so different.
I think with all the tech as well, like as you get deeper and deeper into it, it becomes more and more clear that you really can't do fits without understanding how to fit. Like you can't use tech to replace a slit lamp. You cannot use tech
totally
at this time to replace a full. What it does in some cases, depending on how you run your clinic, would be to kind of free up maybe some time to really focus on higher level things like optics or life goals or managing complications. But you get to the finish line either way. I think, it's a really kind of a fun conversation. Actually, I see a lot of our colleagues now come, you know, on the lecture circuits as well, making a special effort and point to have lectures dedicated just to, you call it, kind of make a joke and be like fitting the old fashioned way, put a lens on and use your slit lamp. But it is so important. It's analogous to corneal GPs. Like that art, mm-hmm. it will never be lost because there are patients that you can't wear sclerals. And so I always go back to finding, and you know, you have to fit those using skills. You know, you can design empirically, but there's always going to be things that we have to adjust and manage that it really does take higher levels. So as of now, you guys, contact lens fitters, we are not replaceable yet by machines.
Robots are not replacing us.
Thank God. Hopefully in our careers, yes, they'll still need us. And then, we retire and then it'll just be sort of like a little flash of something and everything. Or a
robots
painted.
Will have like digested our brains and then maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. At that point.
Right.
Okay.
Although some days I wish I had a little extra me as a robot to just absolutely. Sort of like, then I could just sit in the background and just chill.
Oh, 100%.
Amen. 100%. Amen to that. Agreed. Okay. Well, tell me, switch topics a little. Tell me about just teaching in this day and age, okay? One of the things that Dr. Kwan asked us to specifically talk to you about is focusing on the Gen Z generation and how you adapt to teaching this new, fresh genre.
That's like, I feel like that's like the big question of literally like now, right? Like there's such a gap, quote unquote, between like students and teachers now. In our institution, we do have a lot of younger faculty, I would say. So I was born 91, so I'm like technically a millennial, but I feel like I act like a Gen Z sometimes. So to each their own. But I think the thing is, what the Gen Z generation is, they do a lot of things on, we all know that Gen Z has like, they're very socially aware, right? They like to collaborate. They're very tech savvy too. And I think there's research out there that says like, they literally reach for a device like every 7 minutes.
Oh, I do feel like I'm there almost. That hurts.
I know.
I right? can't
Maybe
feel
like 10 minutes.
Did you guys ever hear about the like the studies that are talking about like how actually what how the amount of energy that it takes to reset and focus on one task to another? So like all of the lost ATP, it's actually insane. So looking at your phone every 7 seconds, how do you even live? I mean, I probably do it too, Roya, to be perfectly honest. Crazy. Right. Can we like take a 2 second, get like little step back here, and can you orient us to like the like generations and what exists between like millennials, Gen Z, like what are the, like, how do all these things work? Cause aren't there like three or four since Roy and I?
No.
Yeah. So
what am I saying? I don't know.
So there's
yeah.
There's
teach us the basics.
So baby boomers.
Okay. There we go. Starting somewhere.
So baby boomers. And then I think that's around 50s or so.
Okay.
Correct me if I'm wrong, and then we have Gen X, and then there is a Generation Jones, which is in between baby boomers and Gen X too. And then we have millennials, and then Gen Z, and then we now do have a Gen Alpha, which are those little elementary school kids everywhere.
So my daughter, who's six, would be Gen Alpha. Okay. Okay, okay.
Yes.
Fun. So we're millennials, right, Roya? Is that true?
We're millennials. Yep. 81 to 96 is a millennial.
Yes. Okay, okay.
There we go.
Okay. I just looked it up.
Okay, perfect.
I'm totally confirming everything he just...
I was like, you didn't know.
Why did they skip like every other year? They do a Gen something. Gen Alpha. Well, Gen Alpha, Gen Z, they're back to back, so never mind. I like that we're millennials. It's a better name than like Gen. I want to be Gen anything.
Well, just like looking at the different generations, right? I know. I love the millennial ones. Like
best.
Through and through.
Best name.
But like the baby boomers, so like they're of that era, right? So like not a lot of technology. It's like the, you know, go to work, come back, like family.
They like all, a phone like call.
Your nuclear unit, right?
Yep.
Yes. No texting.
Letter in the mail.
Yes. Snail mail.
Pay by check.
Then as we get into...
I had years where I didn't write checks and all of a sudden I suddenly had somebody like, I can't remember what it was for. I think it's for Ava's school. And I'm like, I haven't had checks in years, but I do now. So it's like part of that generation. I don't know.
So let me make a side comment too, because I know how to fill out a check, right? But I'm like questioning the new generation because we have certain things where we need like envelopes stamped too. And then they're like, students sometimes don't stamp correctly on an envelope. I'm like, guys, this is a life skill.
This really is a life skill. That's hilarious. Not hilarious, like, haha, you're like, don't know that. But it's like so interesting because I guess if you've never really done that, why would you need to know where the stamp goes?
Why would you?
Yeah, everything's digital. Right. Send a letter on my phone or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Ugh. Email or something like that. Like, it's not really needed anymore unless for like bills or whatever.
Yeah,
right?
Totally. That's so interesting.
And yeah. So Gen X is then that generation that introduces kind of like the helicopter parents, and actually like the parents are more involved in their children's lives, right? That's the first time that's like ever happened. So having the children a little bit more like not coddled, but like taking initiative in their life, the parents are, right? So they're like, oh, like I matter, right? So I'm seen. So slowly getting into like the millennials, like we actually get like a really bad rap. I think the New York Times or the Times actually stated that millennials are kind of like the very selfish generation. We always think about ourselves, blah, blah, blah. But we're like, oh, that's Gen Z. Like, what are you talking about?
Right? We won a prize. We won a medal. That's what they say, yes. Right?
Right.
But we worked hard. We worked through the recession.
Yeah.
We all graduated kind of around when the market crashed, 2008-ish. So we've been struggling to pay off these high student loans ever since. Most of us, right?
Right.
We just don't even get the respect we deserve. Exactly. Okay, then so Gen Z. So yeah, they're obviously tech-driven.
Very. Yeah. So I think the collaboration portion is something that we kind of miss. They want to have connections with people, but maybe it's over the internet or over electronic devices, which is like very different from previous generations. And then just getting into like teaching wise, right? I think they are obviously more like politically aware with like having a purpose of actions, right? Like they might want to like protest more or more vocal about things, right, than previous generations. I think that's something important to consider, and we want to acknowledge that's not always like a bad thing, right? Like we always want to be better for the next generation, right? But it's hard adjusting, I think.
Well, what do you think as you know, you're a young optometrist, right? So thinking back to your time in school and then thinking to like a similar, let's just say, problem that came up, whether it's like fighting over clinic time or, you know, whatever the random bickerings that happen within optometry school, what are some comparisons of what you experienced and like what is going on in this current generation that we should be aware of in real life?
Yeah. And I think it's hard with like people in like academia too, because we always say like, oh, like I never would have like done that as a student or something like that. But, you know, our cohort is very different than like the general population. So that's something always to consider, right?
Totally.
But I know I had classmates that probably argued things to professors that always went in, and I was just like, okay, this is what I did wrong, like let me learn from it and move on, right? And so I think with like teaching in general, but this generation, I think the students are more vocal about things and trying to not offset it, but to like validate it, but also like letting them know like this is not right or this like this is right, right? But like rewarding that, but not like being defeated or giving in to what they're saying. You know, I think that's the fine line that we're trying to balance.
Give me an example.
Can you give us specific tips? So we both have residents. I think your fellow is a Gen Z. Is that true or no? Rhea.
Oh, sorry. Is she Gen Z? She probably. No.
She's a millennial. Okay.
29, 30. Maybe she is.
Okay. So, but anyways, I still would like, because we all have the pleasure of working with all kinds of students, and what would be some key
or
tips
future
on
employers.
Connecting? Yeah. Or just a friend or people, friends, friendships. Like, how do you connect with Gen Z?
Yes.
Yeah. I think like, I'm a very like emotional person, which I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but I think one thing is like emotional intelligence, right? Like empathy is like a big thing. I know like, back in the day, like we never got, at least I didn't like get like positive feedback as a student, right? And so like if we did something good, they're like, okay, like just move on and being like, oh, you could do this much better. I remember at a rotation, like that's literally what happened, like fitting a contact lens and then like, why did you mess this up, right? And so that kind of like sticks, you know, like fear is impactful, but so is like positive feedback, you know? And then like cutting to now, I realized like if someone like did poorly on a proficiency or something like that, I tried to see the silver lining and try to provide like positive feedback and being like, you know, it's good that it happened now because like we can learn from it, right? And keep going. So I think like validating their feelings essentially and seeing like you're allowed to feel like this, but then like having the sandwich method essentially, like giving that feedback what's needed, but then giving like a little bit of positive sugarcoating on that to make sure they take it well.
So no tough love.
Totally. Well, I mean, I think tough love is more of a millennial thing maybe.
So yeah.
I remember sports when I was growing up in like university, like harsh, tough love sometimes. And that's just kind of the way it was. My dance teacher when I was growing up, and she, bless her heart, she was fantastic. I loved every minute of it, but had like the Freddy the stick, like, you know, all those things. And like, there was no rewarding. There was, you make a mistake or your little tummy sticks out and it's like game over. So, but tough love doesn't really work anymore. I mean, yeah, it's just not something that sounds like it really connects as well with the new generation.
Yeah. And something other that I found like was really big is that attention span is much different now than it was before. So meaning like, I'm pretty sure it's like there's students with ADHD that is like 4 times more than now than baby boomers had. So the prevalence is like quite large now. And I mean, I'll admit that like I need to like TikTok, I will go on that. Like, okay, 10 seconds, next one. I
boring.
Need to keep going.
Next, right? Next.
Yeah. Next.
If I could keep next as like a real life thing, yeah. Sometimes I do feel that urge to just next someone. It's just like, let's go to the next topic.
One.
This is boring.
That should be a thing. Yeah, I think just making sure that we're engaging the students, that's like another thing, right? Like as residents and everything, like if you have residents or students, we want to make sure that we're doing something engaging and like active learning. That's something that we try to harp on because I know half the like students are like on their phone or sleeping like during the second portion of my lecture. So it's just, we need to make sure that, okay, like let's stand up, let's think about something, go to the board, write something, come back down. Okay, now we re-energize and can keep going.
I like that. I mean, honestly, like, while it might be a Gen Z thing, I think it kind of helps all of us because while we all have our own generation,
agreed,
a lot of us tend to like adopt some of the younger generation's habits or, you know, mentality or you know, politicalism or whatever it might be. Like, we are kind of adapting. Maybe it's a younger generation thing, but we are kind of adapting a little bit to each younger generation, I feel. And I'm sure that's going to continue, especially because of the way technology just has invaded all of our lives and social media has invaded all of our lives. And it really has changed so many habits. But 100%. Yeah. What about residency in general? Obviously, you went through your residency about 5 years ago now. How do you feel, especially now, having such a key part of the cornea and contact lens service in Chicago, how do you feel residency has changed now since you graduated?
Yeah, I think, so I actually was talking to students right before this. So it was funny, I was telling them, because one of them was like, I don't know if I'm going to do residency. And then their significant other was like, okay, I'm going to do like cornea and contact lens maybe. And it's like, in academia, I feel like we're always like advocates for residencies too. And we're like, come on, you got to do it. And it's like looking at why, right? And some of the reasons it's like, yes, we're in student debt and it's a lot. And it's like, as a student, you're kind of like, okay, I don't want to go into another year. I just want to be done. I want to start making my paycheck, pay off these loans, live life, right?
Yes.
But I tell them like, it's honestly just one more year compared to the rest of your life, you know? So what's one more year? And you're getting paid too. So it's not like it's free labor again, right? And you can always, even if you don't want to go into academia, right? Like residencies, as you guys know, like builds your reputation, builds your skills so you can sell yourself better to the world and then make what you want of it.
Absolutely.
So it adds a lot. And to answer your question about like, how do you think it's changed over time, right? So I think residencies have done a way better job now of like being more flexible and seeing what emphasis that they can add in. It's more like a hybrid instead of like a specific type of residency, which I think it's great because then you get to not lose skills that you may not be focused on during that year that you're trying to perfect it.
I like that. One last thing I was thinking about is like, what do you think about in academia? One of the things that, whether it's in private practice or VA hospital, I mean, everywhere, work culture is a thing, right? Actually, Dr. Kwan brought this up too and said, we need to pick your brain about it. But tell us work culture, whether it be your specific example or if you can even speak to academia in general. I know that you're a member of the Association of Contact Lens Educators and obviously all the different conferences we end up going to just as part of, especially in academia. I'm sure you go to academy and optometry meeting and all the things, but what do you feel work culture's like? How can you represent work culture in academia?
So like, yeah, I guess like work culture is, I guess, different wherever you are, right? So I think like, just to cut back to residency, I tell my students like, that was an amazing time. I still talk to my co-residents. We have a group chat. I love them. I went to like their weddings over the years too. So like building those close relationships. But then like starting somewhere new and then academia too, like each institution's different, right? Some have professors that may be like clinical track. Some may just do didactics. Like our school, we do both. So it's very different. And I feel like it's whatever the people around you make it to be. We just like developed also like in our faculty wellness committee too. So I really appreciate that to the kind of, especially after COVID, I feel like, I know.
Is that for faculty or students or both?
Faculty.
Very cool.
So I think the student organizations have like their own wellness for them. But I was like, we're faculty. We're people. We need something too, right?
Well, it's like the notion of you got to take care of yourself to nurture other people. So that is in any role of teaching, caregiving, or even just being a good friend or a good family member. Wow, that's really cool. I love that your school is doing that. We could probably honestly go on for, I mean, many, many more minutes to hours to, we actually would love to have you on down the road again. One question that I have for you is a final kind of thing
that's nice.
that in a lot of our circles, I've explored a lot with other residency directors or academics, and I'm curious what your opinion is on, because I know you have a lot of background in myopia control, obviously, too. Do you believe that there should be residencies for myopia control, or there's myopia control should be part of primary care residencies? And there's no right or wrong answer to this. I'm just curious what your opinion is, because there's differing opinions out there, but what do you think?
Right. I think it's definitely mainstream in like primary care, just because like a lot of private practice rotations have that. And it's something like our students need to be exposed to in primary care, because that's where you catch it. Right. In Berkeley, we did have like a myopia control clinic. And I think having that part of my residency like helped a lot, because it's a, even though there's atropine too, there's a lot of contact lens fits and like troubleshooting that we need to, especially with ortho kids, right, to solve. So I think having its own specialty is its own, it's nice. And I don't know, like having it with primary care, sure, but I think incorporating with something is what I want. Again, because like optometry is not just one thing, right? It's multiple things put together. So having that as an option of like, okay, I'll perfect my skill in this, but then that's not the only thing I'm going to focus on.
Amazing. Well, where can we find you and where can we learn from you? Do you have any upcoming lectures, gigs, any kind of social media handles or anything? How could our listeners find you again down the road?
Let's see. I think I've done some academy talks and such too.
Nice.
And
we'll link your email your Chicago school stuff on here, so people can reach out to you through there. And you do have an Instagram account too, I think, right? I think that Dr. Kwan had sent it.
I do. Yes. So @vaki.nosh is my handle.
Perfect. We'll link it. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate your time. I know, and there's a million things you're probably juggling, especially in academia, and we just appreciate you taking time to connect with our listeners.
Of course. Yeah. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate having the opportunity to talk to you guys.
Well, thank you so much.
Contact lens people too.
Such a pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah. I wanted to say, like, I remember as a resident, like seeing you guys talk, and it's just like, wow, like it's crazy talking to you guys now. So
you're gonna be that guy.
It's
too.
A mutual street. We're pumped to
it.
Always a pleasure to meet new friends and figure out all the latest and greatest things to do moving forward. Now we'll be watching you. Well, we've come to the end for today. We want to hear from you, so reach out to us with your feedback, questions, stories, things you are interested in hearing from us, either through our Instagram or Facebook. And we can't close today's show without saying thanks to Value Contacts for both making great products and for being amazing people to work with. Be sure to tune in and listen to our next episodes. But until then, try not to blink.